House Judiciary 316. Today is the 11th of April. If you would, call the roll, please.
Yes. Representative Foster. Representative Ledoux.
Here.
Representative Lynn.
Here.
Representative Millett.
Excused.
Representative Pruitt. Representative Groenberg.
Here.
Representative Keller.
Here. Okay, a couple announcements before we get started. One is when we have the maximum height of members here, we're going to stop and have a picture taken of the Judiciary Committee with Annie Carpinetti. So so that'll happen. We'll interrupt as we go. Another thing is we had HB 254 on the schedule today, and it's a really well-intentioned bill to prevent or stop abuse of elders by brushing up the power of attorney law. However, it's pretty extensive, and looking at the calendar and looking at the size of the bill, there's just no way. So we pulled that from the list with the understanding that the I told the sponsor, Representative Hughes, that the House Judiciary, anyway, would be willing to look at that at some time during the interim to see if we have something going for those of us that might come back next year, you know, on this bill. So, and I believe you were a co-sponsor on that one, Representative.
May I say something?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if it's appropriate, but I'd be willing to serve if you were to set up a little subcommittee, and I'll work on it on the interim, and maybe Representative Hughes could be ex officio, and we could take some testimony and stuff. I'll put some time into it.
Thank you for that offer, but we'll deal with it.
Of course.
Yeah, another time. Okay, great. So with that, what we're going to do is go through the list just very briefly to let you know what we're going to do. We're going to start with SGR 22. The sponsor is here in the room, and we're going to do that one first. And then we have a fix-up on SB 171 that I don't think will take very long. And while we have the sponsor here on 171, we'll take up 187. That's Senator Coghill, and Reneva is here in the room. And then we'll go to SB 108, and that's just I think that's just going to be a mechanical procedural thing. And then we got HB 108. Representative Peggy Wilson has been patiently waiting, and Arthur has spent at least one full session here waiting, and so I want to get to that. And I had promised him I'd stay here and hear his bill if I had to stay alone. So, and then lastly, today SB 173, which is Senator Myers on synthetic drugs. So SGR 22, we'll start there. If you would come up and introduce yourself for the record and tell us what your resolution does.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Senator Kathy Giesel. I represent District N, as in November, which is the South Anchorage Hillside, Turnagain Arm, in the top half of the Kenai Peninsula. SJR 22 calls out the NSA and their telephone, their bulk telephone record program, which has been capturing our telephone records, storing them, viewing them, and this calls out our opposition to this program. This program, or this resolution, has bipartisan support over in the other body. In fact, I think every senator signed on as a co-sponsor. It also has bipartisan support across the country. The resolution calls out the Fourth and Fifth Amendment and the violation thereof by this program. And we are simply urging the federal government to truly abandon the program. For any further details, my staff, Jane Conway, is here to also assist in answering questions.
Before we go there, I just want to make sure everybody has the right version in front of you. We have U.A is amended on the floor, evidently, in the Senate. So it's SGR 22-1391/U.A.
That is correct.
Okay. Go ahead.
Jane Conway, staff to Senator Giesel. if you're curious about the amendment that was made on the floor, it added a line, further resolved that the Alaska State Legislature urges the governor to prohibit the use of state personnel and resources to assist the NSA in its collection of mass data on Alaskans without specific search warrant. And also it added the Honorable Sean Parnell, Governor of Alaska, to the list of recipients of the resolution. I have a little presentation that has a, you know, kind of an overview of what's been going on with the NSA. Due to my cold, I might abbreviate that just a little bit. I'm feeling kind of...
Your brevity will be appreciated.
Okay,
you
good.
Saw the list.
I'm one... Okay, great. So the resolution is a reflection of growing negative public sentiment toward the NSA's aggressive collection of data. I think everyone in this room is aware of the whistleblower situation and the uprising against the NSA's collection of data. Let's see, I'm going to be brief. So it was December of 2013, Judge Leon said, I cannot imagine a more indiscriminate and arbitrary invasion of this systematic and high-tech collection and retention of personal data on virtually every citizen for purpose of querying and analyzing it without prior judicial approval. Surely such a program infringes on that degree of privacy that the founders enshrined in the Fourth Amendment. NSA was founded in 1952. It focused on overseas surveillance rather than domestic surveillance, but that has morphed into something quite different now. The activities are a violation of the Constitution and strip Alaskans and Americans of their liberty. It urges the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court to declassify past opinions and urges future opinions to be released to the public. SJR 22 finds NSA's activities a troubling example of federal overreach. And this legislature will in no way assist the NSA in facilitating their unconstitutional programs. Your packet has various articles that I've collected over the last few months on the developments of the NSA. I think just 2 weeks ago, the president did make an announcement that he was going to propose a lot of changes. Those are being deliberated in Congress right now. And I don't know what the outcome will be. And with that, we're open for questions.
Any questions for the sponsor? Representative Grunberg?
I got an email from somebody named Jane Conway. Who's that?
That's me.
Right. And since she didn't want me to use Max 9000.
No.
Okay. Do I hear any objection?
I have a few. I'm serious. If the members would look at line 20 on page 4, and I think this may be something that the guys in the printing can do, the clerk's office, it should be, and the Constitution of the State of Alaska. That's just a technical thing. I don't think that needs an amendment, but you might want to do that. The other thing is that since these are activities of NSA, I believe that is under the jurisdiction of the Senate Intelligence Committee, is it not? And if so, you might want to have copies sent to the chair of that committee and the ranking minority member. I think Barbara Feinstein is the chair, and I don't know who the ranking Republican is, and I think they may have one in the House too. And I was wondering, since I've got to get to 9,000 on this, if you would consider both of those as a combined technical amendment. And the amendment, let me ask you, through the chair, would that be considered a friendly amendment? Okay, so number one, and I'm going to put them together even though they don't necessarily go, that on line 20, page 4.
Wait a minute. Are you making a conceptual amendment?
Yeah.
Okay, conceptual amendment number one, stated very clearly for the record, please. Go ahead.
On page 4, line 20, it should be the Constitution of the State of Alaska, and also that copies be sent to the chairs and ranking members of the U.S. House and U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee, whatever they're called.
Any objection? Okay, that conceptual friendly amendment passes. Any other comments or questions? What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I would move Senate Joint Resolution number 22 as amended. That's 28-LS1391 /U.A from this committee with individual recommendations.
As amended?
As amended.
Okay. Seeing no objection, it passes.
Mr. Chair, I would just say all seriously, good job.
We'll take it at ease.
To my motion, move this SJR 22 with attached fiscal notes.
As amended, right?
As amended.
Okay. No objection. It passes with fiscal notes. Okay. We're still on the record, and what we're going to do is go right into Senate Bill 171. So, Reneva, if you'll come up and identify yourself for the record and tell us what we got.
For the record, Representative Keller, Reneva Moss, staff for Representative Coghill. At Representative Coghill's request, this bill was returned to House Judiciary because the wording actually created a huge fiscal note, so we're trying to get the intent of the bill narrowed down. On the first page, on page one, we want to make it clear that multidisciplinary child protection teams can be formed, but that the Department of Health and Social Services will still be the clearinghouse. So on page 1, line 8, we have added the words that these different entities within subsection A with expertise in child abuse or neglect in participation with the department may facilitate the initial establishment of a multidisciplinary child protection team. And then on page 2, line 11, we have replaced "may to the extent feasible" with the word "shall." So it makes it perfectly clear that although it is now possible for multidisciplinary teams to be formed without participation of OCS, it will still be the clearinghouse for MDTs.
Okay, and just for clarification for the record, we're working off of version 1416 Y, is the judiciary CS that we passed out. And you have in your packets amendment number U.1, which the Yankee. Yes,
Mr. Chair, I don't seem to have the Y version of the bill. No. I have that. I don't have the bill itself, the Y version of the bill.
Nor do I.
At ease. The proper version ahead of us. Any questions for the sponsor or a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
If somebody could just give me a moment to see where this goes, since I just got a copy of the bill. Give me just a minute if I could, please.
Okay, we'll take it at ease.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's kind of a grammatical question to Reneva through the chair, and it looks at the first part of it. I don't have any problem with the second part, but the first one, it will say that the first part of lines 5 through 7, or through 8, will say the department, comma, an agency with expertise in child abuse or neglect, comma, or a tribe, with expertise in child abuse or neglect, comma, in partnership with the department. Does that mean that both the state and municipal agencies and tribes must be in partnership with the department? Or is it just the tribe? I want to be sure that we do what you want through the chair.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Representative Grunberg, that means any one of those entities and the department. may facilitate an MDT.
May I make a suggestion?
Representative Grunberg.
I'm not sure, I don't want to get into the weeds on this, but when the bill drafters look at this, I would request that the amendment be labeled a conceptual amendment, because as the editors over there look at this, they may say there's a better and more flowing way they can phrase that, so there's no question.
I think that's, if it's okay with the sponsor, I think that's a friendly suggestion. When we make the amendment, we'll make
it. The chair, it's fine with me. It is legislegal that drafted this.
Yeah. Okay. And they can, you can express Representative Grunberg's suggestions and concern there. Can I have a conceptual amendment?
Yeah, my motion is to label this amendment Y1 as a conceptual amendment number one. And I just want to make sure that it's really clear. That's my
opinion. Yeah. Okay. Representative Lynn?
Okay. Ready to move an amendment?
Yes. I'm sorry. Did you have a question, Representative Ledoux?
The amendment or removing the...
We're moving the amendment, then we'll you can debate it if we want. We haven't moved the amendment yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not my amendment, his amendment.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was just waiting. Anybody, just make it. We got it here.
I made the motion.
Okay, you did make a motion. Okay, seeing no objection.
Conceptual amendment.
Conceptual amendment number one, which is labeled LS1416Y.1, has been adopted. So, and I see no objection. So that means we will, that puts the bill back in front of us. And can I have a moment?
Without further discussion, I would move.
Representative Ledoux?
So are we moving the bill right now? I've kind of got a question.
Representative Ledoux, you can ask questions if you like, but this is the second time around on the bill. So really the only thing that we had, in front of us was the amendment. But go ahead.
My bill is fine with me, but I don't see how this amendment gets rid of the fiscal note, if that's the intention. Am I missing something here?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the way it is worded without this addition, it reads that any one of these entities may start an MDT without any supervision from the department, but laying a responsibility on the department and other state agencies to participate in an MDT, which causes fiscal notes. Because, for instance, OCS has estimated, I believe, they would have to hire 20 new social workers to comply if even half of these tribes started an MDT without their supervision.
Okay. And just before you proceed, before you have any response, is we're going to stop there because the amendment was adopted without objection, unless you want to stop and object and go back.
No, I don't want to do that. I'm just trying to
understand.
Yeah,
and I'm just trying to keep us moving because that would cause a discussion. You see that there is no question on the floor. So yeah, okay. So Representative Lynn.
Okay, I would move House CS for CS for Senate Bill Number 171 Judiciary 28-LS1416/Y. From this committee with individual recommendations, any attached fiscal note.
As amended. And I will object for Representative Grunberg's question.
Thank you. I was unaware where the last dialogue was going, and as a result of that, I do have a question. Because it sounds like what you're doing now, and I'm kind of looking at Ms. Moss as I say this to, I guess, you through the chair, is to have one agency, the department, is that Health and Social Services, be sort of the clearinghouse. And you're sort of saying it will simplify things to have one agency do it, I gather, rather than a bunch. Okay. Because I was going to say if they're going to have to be 37, and it's just a question of who does it, the cost would be the same. But the purpose is to simplify and expedite through the chair. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay. I remove my objection. And the bill passes from committee again. And that brings us to SB 187. I'm not going to stop. I'm just going to keep pressing on here, and we'll pass the paperwork as we go. So, Reneva, if you would, again, identify yourself for the record. And just for clarity's sake, what we want to do first here is get a motion, if we can, from Representative Wynn. We have a blank CS for our consideration, and we'll put that on the table for discussion.
Mr. Chairman?
I got to find it here again.
Is this the P version?
Okay, I'm sorry. We already have P in front of us. We don't have to do that. Yes.
We don't have to move anything.
We don't have to move it. But okay, we'll take it at ease until we all get it in front of us. But we do have version P in front of us. And if you would, go to the sponsor to kind of remind us where we're at in the processing of this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Reneva Moss, staff to Senator Coghill. And the conceptual amendment was just a actually reversing of the statutes on page 4 and 5 to make it read more clear. On page 4, line 30, after the words records, we inserted limitation of disclosure of certain recorded images and records that are also evidence under AS 1141-410 through 1141-450. And on page 4, line 31 through page 5, line 1, after the citation, we have deleted, there is also evidence for investigation under AS 1141-410 through 1141-450, and this was a recommendation with legal to clarify that everything in subsection J applied to the criminal codes.
Exactly.
And then, Mr. Chairman, Representative Grunberg brought up a very good point. I have talked to Representative Edgman's office and Representative Heron's office, and the issue on that was page 5, line 28. We had the word physician. We were trying to give access to medical records to physicians, and it was brought up that that was too narrow of a term. So we have on page 5, line 28, we've replaced physician with healthcare provider. And we have defined healthcare provider for this section to include basically anyone who provides healthcare treatment in the course of their employment. And Adam from Representative Edgman's office said, good catch, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. We'll take a little at ease. And I think we got it sorted out. Representative Grunberg, did you say you have a motion?
Yes, and I hope somebody will object so we can discuss.
I'll object, sure.
Okay, so I would move P1.
Okay, and that is 28LS1145P.1 for SB 187 version P. So I'll object for purposes of discussion there. On it, we already had an explanation, but is there any further questions?
Yeah.
Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chair, is that now labeled Amendment 1?
Amendment number 1.
Okay. Just for the record, on line 6, the word includes is defined in Title 1 to mean including but not limited to. And I just asked Ms. Moss, is that your intent, too, that you use the general definition?
Through the Chair, yes, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. And that would be my intent as the maker of the amendment.
Okay. That's your intent, just to make that clear in the record. I understood you, right? That's the
that was why I put that on the record.
Yeah. Okay, great. Okay, I remove my objection. Is there any further objection? Okay, that puts the CS for Senate Bill 187 P as amended before the committee. Is there a discussion? We have... I believe Jan is in the room and wants to testify, so why don't we, before we go to committee discussion, we'll have Jan come up. Identify yourself for the record.
My name is Jan Rutherdale, and I'm the chair of the Children's Justice Act Task Force, and our function is to make recommendations that improve the system response to child maltreatment, so that would be both child protection and criminal prosecution. And last fall, we drafted legislation that led to this bill, SB 187, and I wanted to put on the record that we're grateful to Senator Coghill for taking this through. I won't go into, I mean, your packet contains a lunch and learn presentation, or at least the documents online contain that from that we did in February that talks about this bill. I think it's the changes that have been done throughout this is a good working of the agencies. There, I do have one question though with the what appears to be a limitation, and I'm looking on page four, this conceptual amendment, which was just brought through page four, line 30 and 31, going over to page five. The way I read this, and I is that that this only offers protections in cases where there's also evidence for an investigation and under the criminal prosecution, and I just wanted to point out to the committee that that sometimes there's like you have a child has been abused. They're before the child advocacy center. There's evidence. The doctor's examining the child. There's pictures being taken. It ends up not being a criminal prosecution, just a child in need of aid case. But the same danger could happen. The videos could be posted online, and the child would be re-victimized. And so I don't want that to be the effect where there's a whole class of victims that have the potential of being re-victimized. And maybe it just means that initially it's an investigation. I mean, usually the police. I can't think of a sexual abuse investigation that wouldn't initially involve the police, and even though maybe the DA's office eventually decides not to prosecute, it still was initially a police investigation. So if that is the reading of it, then we are perfectly happy with this. But I just don't want to leave out a class of victims getting re-victimized. But otherwise, we are satisfied with the changes, and we support the bill.
You call the sponsor back up. Reneva, on this question, rather than trying to draft anything on the fly here and making a mistake, would maybe the sponsor could write a letter of explanation and send it with the that we intend that if that's what the sponsor intends, is that
Mr. Chairman, I believe Reneva Moss, staffer, Senator Coghill, I believe what they were trying to do was to, there are three sentences in that paragraph, and they were trying to word it so that everything in that paragraph applied to China cases and to criminal cases. The way it was worded, they were concerned that only the first sentence would apply to China and not the other two sentences. They wanted to be inclusive. And I can get an explanation from legal if you'd like that.
So that is the intent of the sponsor, to make sure that's covered in China cases, and that you believe that that's what legal services has done here. Okay. I'm satisfied. Is there any further questions for the spot? Well, first, Jan, were you done? Okay, thank you so much. Okay, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have somebody from Ledger Legal on the phone, or from Department of Law, or any place?
We do have someone from Department of Law, Mr. Chair.
I just want to be sure that it's crystal clear, and they don't have to come back to an obscure House Judiciary hearing to sort this out. I'm not sure I understand the issue, but I want to be sure that it's satisfied. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Identify yourself for the record.
Thank you for the record. My name is Emily Wright. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law China Section. So we reviewed this document. I guess the first thing I would say is I would reference current China statutes. China statutes have a huge number of confidentiality statutes built in. Everything is very private. We have a lot of protections already in place. If the concern is that we want to make sure in sexual abuse and sexual assault cases, which I believe that that is the concern, I think that looking at this first line, 31, reference to 4710.011, 4710.011, those are all the reasons that a child could be a child in need of aid. If the committee would like to reference sexual abuse and sexual abuse statutes for child in need of aid cases, you could add a reference to the subsection which specifically deals with sexual abuse and sexual assault, which is subsection 7. And then you would also have the reference to the criminal case, if there is a criminal case. And that way you could cover both sexual assault, sexual abuse of a minor cases in a China proceeding, as well as if there's a criminal proceeding.
So a question I'd have is, are you saying then, wouldn't that narrow it? I mean, wouldn't there be a danger of narrowing it to the point that we're actually increasing the risk?
Representative Keller, it would narrow it to sexual abuse and sexual abuse of minor cases. My understanding was is that was the point of the bill, was to specifically deal with sexual abuse and sexual abuse of minor and sex assault cases. And I would say that there are, I think the Department of Law's position would be that there are ample protections under China statutes in the rest of the realm.
Okay. Just to clarify then, and if this is consistent with the sponsor, we'll give her a chance to respond in a second. For clarity on this, it would just add parentheses 7 after on page 4, line 31, and this is conceptual. AS 47.10.011, parentheses 7.
Yes, sir. And I would also point out that the next reference to the statute, 4714300, that references the multidisciplinary team statute that you just talked about in 171. So that clearly references all of the China sexual abuse statutes.
Okay, good. Reneva, did you have a response? Is that a positive direction to go?
Mr. Chairman, it's positive, but I would like to point out that we introduced this bill at the recommendation of the Child Justice Task Force, and we've been working with Department of Law, with Jan Rutherdale, with the task force, and with our legal department to try to get this right, and I thought we had it right.
Okay. We'll save our frustration for them and not you then. We'll press on. That's all right. That's fine. Yeah. Okay, so any further questions for the sponsor?
Oh,
or the Department of Law?
This.
Pardon?
We're going to ask somebody else to come back on this point.
We are?
That was a question to you.
No, I wasn't planning.
Oh, okay. Let me just see here.
Representative Grunberg, do you have a question? Well, what we're going to do right now is go ahead and put this before the committee, and we may call you back up, either one of you, if there's further questions.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I'm not at all memorized these statutes or anything. I see two potentially differences in here, and I just want to be sure that we accomplish what everybody wants to accomplish rather than just doing this on the fly. May I make a suggestion, Mr. Chair?
A suggestion to the committee, Representative Grunberg?
You.
Okay, go ahead. What is your suggestion?
I would ask if we could possibly roll this to the bottom of the calendar and let these guys talk and see if they want to make a suggestion, and then they can come back in a few minutes, because I don't want you to be stuck with the wrong thing. I want you people to talk, and if necessary, get your lawyers, but we get this squared away. If they could have a few minutes, that may help them.
Representative Grunberg, that's a very good suggestion. So what we'll do is roll this down the calendar on the agenda, and thank you for the suggestion. Okay, well, that brings us to SB 108, and hopefully this is nothing more than a procedural effort. SB 108, we have the sponsor's representative here. This bill has been passed by this committee in SB 64. House Finance Committee has asked us to separate it so that they have both vehicles in House Finance to work with SB 64 and this bill separately, and without second guessing anything about what they want or are doing, I think it's appropriate for us just to, if I could, just get a motion to move the bill. That's what I would prefer. But is there any questions, first of all, what we're doing?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
So we're looking at the L version of this?
I've got the R version.
R version. Representative Grunberg, we have before us, and we had before us in the committee, CS for Senate Bill 108. Judiciary, our version.
Give me a minute, if I could, to find it. Try to find this thing.
Taking at ease.
Yes, sir.
We're back on the record, and I would entertain a motion to move our version, unless somebody is still confused of what we're doing.
Let me do it quicker.
Representative Grunberg.
Okay. We actually rolled this into Senate Bill 64, and this looks to me like it was in an amendment L.18. If we pass the bill out, the R version, will that pass over to the House Finance Committee, this L.18, and if so, is that the version you want? You just want this clean thing to go through the chair?
Representative Grunberg, that's what I described, exactly. Yeah. So
you have to speak.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Chuck Kopp representing the bill sponsor, Senator Dyson. Representative Grunberg, that is correct.
I have no objection.
Yeah. Are you ready, Mr. Chair?
I am.
Mr. Chair, I'd move CS for Senate Bill number 108, Judiciary. That's 28-LS0973/R. Individual recommendations attached fiscal note, Ms. Committee.
Okay. Version R moves from committee. And we'll take an at ease while we get ready for the next bill. Make sure we have this time have everything out of order. Back on. We are again looking at House Bill 108. And again, for the record, we last time we had this bill in front of us, we were considering version O. What I'm going to do is ask for a motion to put version P in front of us for discussion. We'll ask the, and I'll object.
All right, Mr. Chair. I would move the new version here, CS for House Bill number 108, that's 28-LS0383/P, for consideration.
Okay, I will object, and we'll go to the sponsor to explain where we're at, and give us our little refresher on what the bill does.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Representative Peggy Wilson from District 33, and the only difference between the O version and the P version is the last line, and all we did was update the date at the very end. That's the only difference. So, to give you a quick review, House Bill 108 would create a $10 surcharge for minor offenses, or as we refer to them, tickets. This $10 surcharge would go to create an e-citation fund. And the purpose of this fund is to help police departments, troopers, and the courts move to the 21st century by using electronic devices to issue tickets instead of using paper tickets. For example, currently, if you receive a paper ticket for running a stoplight, it can take up to 12 days to go through the court process, and many errors could occur. A handwritten paper ticket may be hard to read, which may lead to typos and issues in the clerk's office. When the information is put into the court system, having a ticket processed electronically will eliminate many errors because the information will be transferred almost immediately into the court system without a middleman. And what the bill does, it streamlines the court process, allowing you to pay or appeal the ticket almost instantly instead of waiting up to 12 days. It allows municipalities that don't have e-ticket equipment to get them. Currently, larger municipalities applied for a grant from a federal e-citation program, but with the federal funding source, it's now drying up, of course. And so many of the other communities that don't have them would like to have them, and the court system would love for them to have them. So this bill increases peace officer safety by reducing the amount of time an officer has to be on the side of a road. Being struck by a vehicle during a traffic stop is the leading cause of death for peace officers in the last 10 years. So it would do several things. And the main thing, though, is to would create the $10 surcharge for minor offenses, which would go into a fund that would be used. And the communities that now have e-citations, this would help them maintain them because it's costly to maintain that. And so this fund, it would be there for the communities that don't have them to be able to get them, and the communities that do would be, help them maintain them.
A question. If the electronic citations are more efficient, why do we need a surcharge? If they save money, you know, is it the kind of thing that, I mean, I'm just trying to, why if it's more efficient, why are we funding it?
Well, one of the reasons is that most communities that got them got grants from the federal government to get them, but the federal government ran out of the grants. they aren't giving them anymore, so this will allow the other communities to get them and then to keep them maintained when they do get them.
Nancy Mead is here for the court system, and she can give us some insights, too. Is there any other questions, Representative Lynn?
Well, it's maybe more of a comment than a question, but on electronic, you have to input an electronic device, and there's a potential for error. There's as much as writing it down, or phoning it in, you enter it into the computer. There's a thing called GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. And so if you put it in correctly, you're just going to get you're going to get the wrong answer, the wrong material faster.
Well, the problem is that it has to go through so many people to get it copied over, and lots of times they've been out in the rain, and there's rain on the paper is smudged and whatnot, and that happens a lot. And then when they get up there and give it to the next person to transfer to the court papers that then get sent into the court, and then the court has to transfer it into their records. So there's quite a few times that it happens versus just one time.
Right.
And this is my aide, Arthur Martin, and I don't know if Arthur had anything extra to say. Or
thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Arthur Martin, staff for Representative Piggy Wilson. And to address your comment, Mr. Chairman, in regards to the efficiency, I know that it's kind of a cliche here in the building where we've often been for the last several weeks saying that, you know, we want to upgrade the state to the 21st century. But in many regards, this legislation would indeed help the state police departments and state troopers as well as the courts really move to the 21st century by moving away from paper tickets to electronic filing of tickets. And to address the efficiency, it's kind of like what the legislature here is doing, is that we're slowly trying to implement iPads, for example, and it's a lot more efficient to use iPads. We are able to instantly get, you know, bills and fiscal notes, etc., but it does have a certain cost associated with iPads, maintaining them, making sure that individuals are trained to use them. I'm sure we, and so if you look at the fiscal note for the Department of Public Safety, it actually, on page 2, it outlines exactly what this fund is going to do. And I know that last year when we had a bill hearing, Mr. Chairman, you had concern that this funding could be used for getting, you know, hidden cameras or radars or other things, and this fund would not and could not do that. It would be specifically to help, you know, move the state departments, police departments, the court system to the 21st century, and it kind of lays out what it does.
Representative LeDoux?
I guess I'm trying to figure out how exactly, I mean, you get stopped by a policeman. How does he issue an electronic citation to you? I mean, suppose somebody doesn't have a computer. I mean, most of us do have computers, but there are people who don't have computers.
If they carry something about this size, and they just mark it off, and as it's marked off, they get the information from the person they've stopped, and it goes. It's kind of like our iPads. We can put information on it, and that transfers over to somewhere else.
But
the person driving doesn't have to have it. It's only the person that's.
Oh, okay. Follow up. Okay. So does the person who's driving get anything? I mean, he does this electronic citation, and he puts all of the stuff into his computer. How does that go from him to the person that he's giving the citation or the ticket to?
Through the chair, there is a copy that gets torn off and he gets handed.
Okay. Gotcha. Thank you.
Any further questions for the sponsor? Seeing none. I just wanted to point out here that we have State Troopers Rick Roberts is online for questions. We also have Nancy in the audience. Did you have any comments, Nancy? Okay, we'll ask Nancy to come up and give us testimony.
I'm going to have a question for somebody at some point.
What the heck for Nancy?
I don't know.
Before we get started, Nancy, on your testimony, I think I never acknowledged Representative Pruitt. He joined us early on in the committee, and I'm sorry. And Representative Neil Foster has just joined us. And after we wrap up on this bill, we're going to stop and take a picture with Annie, the star here. By the way, if you notice, we're keeping her away from the mic because short timers are dangerous, you know. If you would identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Nancy May, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System, and I just wanted to explain a few extra things about electronic citations that are filed with the court. We had a small discussion about parking citations the other day. This is a little bit related, actually. I first want to clarify that the court system would not be a recipient of any funds under this bill. This bill, on page 2, lines 28, 29, 30, has the funds going all to the Department of Public Safety, which then has discretion to distribute it to itself or to municipalities for the equipment. The court system, though, is very involved in electronic citations. Already about two-thirds of minor offense citations statewide are filed electronically with the court system. And that's been done by some of the, well, APD does it, the Alaska State Troopers, and I can give you a list of communities which do operate with electronic citations already. Mostly minor offenses, as you've heard before, are traffic and fish and game and littering and some alcohol offenses, et cetera, parks offenses. And then I also just wanted to give you an idea of the amounts that the court has collected. Already, minor offenses currently have a surcharge on them, what's called a police training surcharge. By statute, every speeding ticket, if it's a $120 ticket, there's an extra $10 already for police training. So it was nice and neat. We could predict how much this would collect because it would be whatever we paid last year for police training surcharges. So there were about 60,000 minor offenses filed with the court last year, and of that, about $204,000 is what the court collected for those surcharges. So that's what would happen under this bill, and then transmitted to DPS. Actually, it goes to the State General Fund with a notation that it goes to DPS, but that's, you know, just a technicality, actually. So this bill, it's estimated, would generate from the court about $200,000 to go to this fund for DPS. And I want to point out that that's what the court sends, but the court also has a good number, as I explained the other day, that are defaults, that people just don't pay their ticket, and then we give those to the Department of Law Collections Unit to collect, and when that happens, the person also has to pay a $25 extra fee, et cetera, and permanent fund dividends are garnished. Anyhow, that would be another potential up to $200,000. Now, that's potential because the Department of Law doesn't have 100% collection rate on these. They're the lowest priority of things that PFDs are garnished for. But that's a pool that would also go to this fund. And then also, we have agreements with cities, as I was explaining before, about what we collect and they collect. So certain cities collect their own funds for this, and that would be another chunk of money under this bill that would go to the e-citation fund that it sets up. So I just wanted to give that background on the numbers, and I guess if you have any questions about the process of citations, I know about that.
Thank you. Representative Pruitt?
So I'm just trying to reference our conversation the other day. So this is for minor offenses. Does this also apply for the citations that we were addressing that were separate from this? What the items that can still be left under the windshield wiper? Would we also be adding some to those?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, that's right. Parking tickets are tickets and citations. You can think of those as absolutely interchangeable terms. So these are minor offenses, which is anything that's punishable by a fine of $500 or less. That's the statutory limit. And yeah, they're tickets, and whether they're parking tickets or whatever. This statute does exclude tickets, citations for where the fine is less than $30. So a $20 parking ticket under this bill would not receive a $10 surcharge, but a $75 parking ticket, which it might be, I don't know, a handicap zone or something different, would.
Mr. Chair, we're going to add to parking tickets too, not just I think that was very informative. Thank you for that information.
Okay. Any further questions? Yeah. Representative Grunberg?
Through the chair, Ms. Mead, you are already, you're not using these electronic the citation machinery equipment. That is not court system equipment, I gather. It is public safety or somebody else, right?
Through the chair, that's correct, Representative Grunberg.
Okay. Does the court system have any experience in the purchasing and use of this equipment presently? Is there any such equipment? There is equipment like this in use in the state, I gather, from what people have said. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Perumber, yes, two-thirds of citations are issued with these what are called packet writers that APD and other law enforcement uses, but the court has no experience with purchasing those, if that's your question.
No, and are we going to, Mr. Chair, are we going to have somebody from public safety on the line?
Representative Grunberg, we will.
Thank you,
Nancy, for your testimony. Rick Roberts, you online, and if you are, identify yourself, and Representative Grunberg has a question for you.
Yes, sir. This is Lieutenant Rick Roberts with the Alaska State Troopers, and through the chair, Mr. Grunberg, glad with your question, sir.
May I, Mr. Chair?
Representative Grunberg?
Mr. Roberts, I don't want to put you on the spot if you don't know. Maybe it should be somebody else in your department. My question goes to the department's experience in ramping up to use this new equipment. Where are we in that? I'm concerned that we get good equipment, that there's competitive bidding as necessary, and how this thing is going to work. Through the chair.
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, the Department of Public Safety and Alaska State Troopers have been utilizing this equipment for the last 5 years. The Alaska State Troopers use a system called TRAX to write these citations in our vehicles. 23 other police agencies in the state of Alaska also use the same software. The Fairbanks Police Department uses another type of software, as does the Anchorage Police Department. All of us in common use a computer mounted in our police cars, and this equipment that we talk about are the mounting equipment or hardware to have this safely mounted in a police car, along with the computer. And we also have the back of your driver's license and registration has a barcode that has your information on it. We use a scanner to import that information into the citation. And then we have a printer in our car that prints out the copy of the citation for the person we're issuing a citation to. When that process is complete, we electronically send a copy of that citation to our servers, and then it goes on to the Alaska court system into CourtView. We've been purchasing this equipment through grant funds over the last 5 years, and this surcharge would allow us to refresh that equipment as the computers got old and as we needed to update parts and pieces of this equipment.
Follow up, Representative Grunberg?
No.
Okay, thank you, Rick. Representative Pruitt has a question for you.
Would you replace these items without this fund that we're creating anyways? I mean, talking about what the process would be without the fund and what the process exactly would be. I mean, is it just because the money's there, you guys will replace stuff that may not necessarily have been as old and you have some extra time on? Help me understand that piece, too.
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, right now we've been standing this equipment up over the last few years with federal grant monies that have been issued to the Alaska Highway Safety Office. We've been, in turn, applying for grants for this equipment. The Division of Motor Vehicles has also applied for equipment grants, and we have, me personally and DPS, has then purchased equipment for police agencies using this grant money from DMV and other sources. In the future, as federal grant funding becomes less available or non-existent, we're looking for ways to be able to identify funding to replace this, not only for the state troopers, but for other smaller agencies who might not have the resources to replace this equipment and be able to keep them in line with doing these electronic citations. And this equipment is also used for our electronic crash reports that has been discussed at several points during this legislative session. If this funding or this surcharge is not made available to us at this point, I know that DPS would probably ask for capital funds or some other source to, if grant funding wasn't available, to try to refresh this equipment and update it when it became necessary to do so.
Okay. Thank you for taking time, Rick, to call in. Nobody else online to talk about HB 108? And I don't think there is anybody in the room left, so we're going to close public testimony. Before the committee for committee discussion action.
Mr. Chair, there's no further discussion. I would propose to move this bill. Okay. So I would move CS for House Bill number 108, 20-LS0383/P, individual recommendations and any attached fiscal notes.
Okay, seeing no objection, the bill passes. Okay, thank you. What we're going to do here now is orient yourself, if you would, in the committee back to SB 187. We're going to get the right paperwork in front of us. When we get back, we'll have the sponsor come up and explain where we're at and just some closing words, and we'll see if we're ready for action on that. We're going to take an at ease here shortly for a photograph. But I want to make sure that we all are looking at SB 187. That's partly for you, and it's also to notify Quinlan Steiner, who's online for 187, and Rick Allen from the Public Advocacy. And so we have several standing by for that, but we're going to take an at ease here now a little bit. And we have in front of us SB 187, and we have the sponsor. If you'll give us an update of where we're at on your discussions, please.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Renee Vamos, staff to Senator Coghill. And we have met, and we're happy with the way it is without the subsection 7. I understand Quinlan is on the line, and Quinlan was the one that recommended the amendment that you passed last time, which added to line 30 on page 4 the language that limitations on disclosure of certain recordings, images, and records that are also evidence for an investigation under AS 1141-410 and 1141-450. Rule 8 is a rule of China, which already is very confidential, as you know. Through the years, we have passed legislation tightening up the confidentiality. But this adds some subsections to Rule 8 that relate to criminal investigations. So Ms. Rutherdale and Emily Wright have looked at this. They agree with the language. But by adding this subsection 7 that Emily had mentioned but wasn't really inferring that it needed to be added to the statute, because that would narrow the statute. So we like it the way it is.
Okay. What I'm going to do, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, a couple of times Ms. Moss, through the chair, has read language that does not appear in my P version. May I just pass this over to Ms. Moss? If you take a look, Reneva, at line 31, just make sure that the language I have in version P is the language that you think should be there, because there's another line that several times she's read that beginning of that provision, and line 31 she has not read.
I'm talking about the Chair, Representative Gruenberg, that is the amendment. I'm reading it as you amended it at the last meeting.
We have a version, just to make sure we have all, is all clear. We have number one adopted, amendment number one, and it's labeled
version
P1.
Version P, right?
Yeah, it says 1145P1.
Oh,
so that's what's being referenced
when
we're reading here.
I see. I need to have that back then. Yeah. Okay, so that's the portion of the bill that has been superseded by P1, and you're reading it including our amendment.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, no, I am reading that section as you amended it with a conceptual amendment, this amendment, at the last meeting.
I have, this is conceptual amendment number one by Lynn, adopted without objection. That's what you're referring to. Okay, because they didn't reprint version P. I see. This is your amendment, and you got to read the bill on line 4 as it's amended by you. That was to Representative Lynn. So we're clear.
Okay, great. So at this point, thank you for your input. And is there anybody online that wants to testify on SB 187? And I think we're done in the room. So public testimony is closed. It's before the committee.
Thank you, Barry. Without discussion from anybody else, Mr. Chair, I would propose we move CS Rescinding Bill Number 187, 28-LS1145/P from this committee with individual recommendations and any attached fiscal note.
Yeah, and that's as amended.
As amended.
And the fiscal notes with updated fiscal notes.
An updated fiscal notes.
Amendment. Okay.
So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. So SB 187, seeing no objection, passes from committee. We're going to take an at ease. So we SB 173 is the bill that is up before us, and I believe we have version Oscar in front of us. That's LS 1242 Oscar.
Remove that one.
Yeah, if you would, sir.
Yeah. What if I can find it? I'm in an area. Okay. We got Oscar. Okay, Mr. Chair, I would move CS for Senate Bill Number 173 Judiciary, 28-LS1242/Oscar for discussion.
Great. Thank you. Seeing no objection, well, I'll object for explanation questions. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Edra Morledge, staff to Senator Meyer. Before you, you have SB 173, which was a companion bill to Representative Millett's HB 362, which we heard on March 26th in this committee, and they are identical. So during that previous hearing, there was a number of questions that were asked by committee members, some issues that were raised, and I took those to the legal department so that we would be able to answer those for you. You should have a memorandum in your packet from our drafter, Kathleen Strasbaugh, and she should also be on the line. And what I would like to do, because there are no changes in the draft of the bill, but there are a number of questions that were answered, is turn it over to Kathleen Strasbaugh, or at least let her go through the memorandum and clear up some of those questions and issues that members had. I know that there is also the municipal prosecutor from Anchorage online who is prepared to speak to the genesis of this bill and how it came about and why it's modeled the way it is and why it's written the way it is. So with your permission, I would prefer to leave it to the attorneys.
You bet. Okay, thank you. To reiterate, maybe repeat, we got Tony Piper online from Health Social Services. We got Randall Hahn from the State Troopers. We got Cynthia Franklin, Municipal Prosecutor, and Rick Allen from the Office of Public Advocacy. I do not have Kathleen, but she's on. Okay, Kathleen, have you been following this? If you would...
Yes, I have. I'm trying to get the memo up in front of me, but I'm prepared to answer any questions you might have, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for the legal department or anybody online from the committee? Kathleen, if you don't mind, if you would... can you just give us a brief overview of the differences in all from the A version? And I just want to confirm that I understood the testimony, what you said, but you made some changes in the old version reflects some changes that were questions that came up before or not? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Through the chair, Edra Morledge again. Yeah. No, you've had only one version in front of you, which was Representative Millett's, and it is identical to the version SB 173 that you have in front of you.
Okay.
But when you heard the previous version, the House version, those were the questions that were brought up by several of the committee members that we then got answered. Because the two versions are identical, they should answer questions on both of the bills.
Okay. Oh, thank you. So, yeah, I was satisfied myself with the responses that we had in the committee at the time. But is there any further questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg?
I take it the memo you're talking about, Ms. Morledge, is Kathleen Strasbaugh's memo dated February 10, 2014.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, no, there is a more recent version that I submitted. I think the committee is passing it out now.
Oh, it's coming.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to make it a little easier where we reorient. We're back on the record, and Representative Grunberg has a comment, and I think that Representative Pruitt has a question for Kathleen. And there may be others. Representative Grunberg?
Obviously, I haven't had a chance to really fully review this. And does this go to finance after this?
Through the chair, yes.
Okay. I'd ask Ms. Morledge, you've seen this memo here, the one dated March 28th?
Yes.
I would be interested in maybe as we go through these, for discussion only, knowing the sponsors' views as we take up each one, because there are some that Kathleen specifically recommends we adopt and some that she doesn't seem to recommend, and I don't know if there's anything that falls in between, but it's a lot for me to digest in 2 minutes, but I'm willing to try.
Okay, thank you for the comment. We'll try to do that, try to accommodate. Representative Pruitt?
Yeah, thank you. This is probably for Kathleen, if she's on still. There's three of these that caught my eye. I'm looking at the memo now. This is a reference to the version A, but I'm looking at the memo from Kathleen to Senator Meyer back on March 28th. Let me start with the question number six, which indicates what prevents a person from possessing, offering, displaying, marketing, advertising, or selling a synthetic drug that does not meet one from both that statute. Could a manufacturer, packager list exactly what is in the product and not be in violation of this new law? I'm trying to make sure that I understand it, because you start out, it is true that if a substance does not meet the criteria, the possession would not be illicit under this statute. So help me understand, are there loopholes here that we need to close?
I'm Catherine Strasbaugh, Legislative Legal Services. Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I don't know that I would characterize it as a loophole. The law is designed to address a particular type of product and transaction, which is characterized by the lack of disclosure of contents and misleading packaging, and it is not addressed to the chemical composition of the substance and so on. And so if a purveyor of one of these products did fully and correctly label them, they would not be in violation of this law. I mentioned a few things that might occur, and I think some were mentioned at a previous hearing. For example, if the product is an import and it isn't, and there's no disclosure, then it can't be imported. So, and perhaps someone else will have to speak to that as to what the facts are. But that's one issue. Another is that a product may not be found safe for human consumption, and there are federal laws which govern the safety of products that are for human consumption. And so the disclosure of the contents might run afoul of federal regulation. And in fact, misrepresentation, with or without disclosure of contents, is something that the FDA engages in enforcement activity around, but although they tend to go after larger purveyors than smaller ones. But at any rate, the whole basis of the proposed statute is directed toward mislabeling, so that no one can find out what the product is made of. And that's where in the safety problem lies. So those are my understandings of the facts and policy issues that are behind this, and others may be able to speak to it more thoroughly.
Can I follow up on that?
Follow up, Representative Pruitt.
Okay, so and I apologize, because I'm not as familiar with the federal and the FDA, and of course, whoever can be, they're so confusing. But I want to make sure here. Then, I mean, you hear about like supplements, for example, that are not. You know, people will make claims the supplement's going to help you, whatever it may be. And, there's really no proof that that's the case. And then they'll indicate it has not been reviewed by Food and Drug Administration, or it's not been proven. I mean, is there something to, I mean, could they basically go out there and say, in the same manner as supplements, that, you know, it doesn't have to be reviewed by FDA and get around it in that capacity now that they've listed everything out that's in it?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Pruitt, the FDA will go after a supplemental product if its claims are inaccurate. They don't do it with every supplement, but they have gone after some that are marketed on television. While waiting for another hearing on this bill, I went through the FDA's website, and they had a list of enforcement items addressed towards supplements. So supplements if someone's marketing a supplement, makes outrageous claims or does not include or inaccurately declares what the substances are, what the levels are, they may well get in trouble with the FDA. I don't know how often it happens, and obviously they have to engage in decisions with respect to how to use their enforcement power. But it's my understanding that there are some circumstances under which misleading claims can be prosecuted under federal law.
One other question, Mr. Chair, if that's
Representative Pruitt, is it on number six?
It's six, and it's
the reason I'm asking is Representative Ledoux has a question. Is your question on Representative Ledoux? Is your question on number six? And I know Representative Pruitt has another question, but
yeah.
Okay, sure.
I will yield the floor.
So suppose you package something and you just say what's in it, and you list all of the ingredients that are in it, and then you say not safe for human consumption, but you still have all of these ingredients in it that anybody with street sophistication, so to speak, knows is what they want. Is this going to be a violation of anything?
Kathleen, if you would identify yourself for the record again and respond.
Kathleen Strauss-Wall, Legislative Legal Services. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I think that an accurate portrayal of the product, both in terms of content and in terms of effect, and might well not be pursuable under this law. I believe there are others online who may have experience with prosecuting under the ordinance that might have more interesting information about how to address issues of that type. But in order to be found in violation of this law, you would have to violate both the misrepresentation, both of the misrepresentation provisions of the first section.
Representative Ledoux, is it okay if I ask Rick Allen from Public Advocacy if he has a response
sure.
to that? Rick, are you online? Are you hearing the questions? And
Mr. Chairman, if I might, would you pose that question to Cindy Franklin, who's the municipal prosecutor in Anchorage, because she
okay.
she has...
And Rick didn't respond. Maybe he's offline, and maybe it doesn't matter. Cynthia Franklin, an Anchorage Municipal Prosecutor, do you have any insight here for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Cynthia Franklin. I'm the Anchorage Municipal Prosecutor, and Anchorage passed a similar ordinance in January 14th of 2014, and we have had some enforcement of the ordinance. The language of the ordinance is designed to address the packaging. The packaging was designed to address the lack of laws. So while I appreciate the representative's questions about the manufacturers just listing all of the ingredients in order to get around the law, I don't see that as a reality. In this situation, this is when you're talking about someone changing their packaging the law, you're really talking about the purveyor of a legitimate product, and the purveyors of these products are drug dealers. So the reason why the packages don't contain the chemical composition of the drugs is because oftentimes they don't know the chemical composition themselves. These are not purveyors of Red Bull or nutritional supplements or any legitimate consumer product. These are drug dealers packaging up their products and selling them as iPod cleaner, as potpourri, as aromatic substances, mislabeling them. And, you know, I can understand trying to play out what could potentially happen and how these drug dealers could respond to legislation that outlaws their products, but they're not legitimate business people who are selling a legitimate product. So it's very hard for me as a prosecutor to picture the drug dealer saying, well, let's just list all of these substances that we're coming up with to create these crazy synthetic drugs. Let's just list them on the packaging and get around the law in that fashion. The laws are designed to address the retailing of the product in our communities, because the retailers have insisted that because we can't keep up with the chemical combinations that the drug dealers are coming up with, that the products are therefore legal and they can sell them over the counter. And so the experience that we've had in Anchorage is the response is from our retailers within our own community to take the products off the shelves. Now, whether or not a retailer would accept a product that looked in every way like these illegal substances, except that they had the ingredients listed out, would be a twofold question. Would the retailer then list it? And then if the officer seized it, would we prosecute it? And you could think, Representative Ledoux, of a sliding scale. If you're talking about something that says not for human consumption, potpourri, but also list the ingredients, would I, as the prosecutor, be able to prosecute that case successfully? I think it's going to depend on other things on the packaging that are encompassed by the statute. But frankly, as a prosecutor, as a career prosecutor, I don't see that happening, because the assumption that everyone is making is that these are some kind of legitimate product and there's some kind of person on the other end who is trying to legitimately sell a legitimate product. And in fact, what these are is they're drugs coming into our communities. And the reason they're not correctly labeled and their ingredients aren't listed are, number one, because they're being manufactured and distributed by drug dealers, and number two, they don't know what's in them, so they can't really say.
Follow-up,
Representative Ledoux.
So do you have the ability in the municipal prosecutor's office, or would we have the ability in the state prosecutor's office, that if there is a product and it's listed with, you know, a half million different things, and then it says not safe for human consumption, does the municipal prosecutor take these things and test them out to make sure that, you know, everything that they say is listed and that there isn't anything else in them? I mean, in order to do a prosecution? I mean, I guess what I'm thinking of is right now they may be off the shelves, but just like the drug dealers have figured out that they need to change the ingredients in order to keep up with the law or to circumvent the law, why wouldn't they figure out that they need to change the packaging in order to circumvent the law?
Cynthia, I believe that question was to you.
Right. Representative Ledoux, through the chair. I think that what we would see in terms of prosecution would be the officers in a store or on the street with an individual looking at a package, comparing it to a guideline that we as the prosecutors have given them, saying if you see this, this, or this, ticket, season ticket. If they saw some but not all of the factors we were looking for example, they're looking for no ingredients and not for human consumption. They see not for human consumption, but they also see a list of ingredients. I believe that APD's response in that situation might be to seize the package and bring it, but perhaps not issue the citation, with the idea that once the prosecutor had looked at it, if they felt it met the statute or ordinance as outlined, we would file the citation. If not, we would not. So it would be a factual determination. And I recognize that because we are not testing, the municipality, neither the municipality or the state would anticipate testing substances under this law, because the whole idea is to find a way to address these substances without requiring the traditional forensic chemical testing of the products that the manufacturers have kept ahead of. it would be a factual call, and I would not foresee the kind of individuals and operations in the products that I see, the examples of the products that I see, researching the laws and saying, oh, well, all we have to do to keep ahead of this law is list all of our ingredients, because if they list the ingredients, they might indeed violate the Controlled Substances Act of various cities or states. And you also have to keep in mind that many of these manufacturers are national-based. The retailers in Alaska are receiving these products and shipments from other places. The chemicals originate in China. They're sprayed onto natural materials at various distribution points and then shipped out through the United States. So they're trying to keep ahead of laws in all 50 states and the federal laws. And so I think listing the ingredients would be risky, that they would be running afoul of Controlled Substances Acts in at least some of those states. And frankly, they're not incredibly law-abiding people. So I don't foresee a response to this bill being these drug dealing manufacturers changing to list the actual ingredients in the product. But if that happens, if APD were to seize a packet that had some but not all of the indications that it was in violation of our ordinance or the state law, I would anticipate their response would be to seize the packet, have a prosecutor look at it, and just make a decision whether factually we could go forward with a citation, as they do in other criminal cases when the factual evidence is somewhere in between being very clear-cut and clearly not qualifying for prosecution. We, frankly, have that happen in other types of offenses all the time, and they're close calls, and we just make a call and proceed or don't.
On that same question, Representative Grunberg has a question.
Yes. We have some members of the defense bar. We have Quinlan on the phone. Is that right?
I think they dropped off.
Oh. Okay. I would like, before we just complete even this particular witness's testimony, to put somebody on the defense bar on, because I see there are a number of very significant legal issues here. And I know the prosecutors, with all due respect, are charged with enforcing and making sure that anything they've drafted survives challenge. They look at the best case scenario from their point of view. I want some testimony from the worst case scenario. I want somebody to go through this bill and tell us, if necessary, line by line, the problems and the challenges they see, so we can deal realistically with whether this bill is going to be enforced.
Representative Grunberg, I've asked, they'll call and try to get Quinlan on. So,
I'm sorry, say again?
They're calling to see.
Oh, okay. I just...
Yeah. Oh, okay, okay. We'll do that. If you would, Ernest, see if Quinlan can call in. Representative Ledoux?
I would suspect that one of the reasons why this bill might survive a constitutional challenge is that because it is a civil penalty rather than a criminal penalty. In a civil penalty, they don't have to provide public defenders. There's no right to a jury trial. And therefore, to the extent that it survives constitutional challenge, it may simply be because there is no constitutional challenge.
May I respond to that, please, for a minute?
Well,
very briefly.
Very briefly, then, because we want to see if there's other questions on the questions.
The reason I'm saying this is whether or not it survives isn't the question. This is a very low penalty. It's $500.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is ultimately going to be a business decision.
Exactly.
By the government, what level it is, whether it's worth prosecuting somebody for a little bottle here, if it's going to be difficult to prosecute successfully. And their question, I'm just going to give you one question with one word I see here.
Who are you asking, Representative Grunberg?
The world. I mean, just comment, I'm saying, in this. That, and that's on page 3 line 8. I'm going to ask the bill sponsor this. Compliance with state or federal law. Let's say the product, whatever it is manufactured in Idaho. And there's nothing against that particular thing in Idaho. And it's brought up here to be marketed. Would it be the intent to make it the law of Idaho that sets the standard, or the law of Alaska? And there would be also in there a subsidiary question of whether that could be a violation of interstate commerce, because if it's, you know, unless it's specifically prohibited under federal, whatever it is, food and drug laws, it may be okay. I just see they're just a bunch of questions, and I think there's a legitimate issue.
Did you get a question out of that?
Probably not.
A little bit, yes.
I'll let you respond, and Quinlan is calling in.
Okay, through the chair, Representative Grunberg. The part of the question that I think I can answer is that it would be our intent that it would be under our state law, Alaska law. That would be the jurisdiction.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
Then we need to have somebody at some point be prepared to testify whether that would be a burden on interstate commerce if it's permissible under federal law and under the law of the state of manufacture. I mean, I don't know. And I'm just raising issues, a few of them that I see. And if we do something that's complicated, I wouldn't be sure we're going to be helpful here.
Right. Okay. What we'll do is Quinlan's online. Quinlan, you were offline, so I'm assuming you were not following detail by detail. And Representative Grunberg has a question for you. I'll let him iterate it to you.
Mr. Steiner, can you hear me?
Yes.
Quinlan Steiner, are you online or you're on mute, or try one more time here?
Yes, this is Quinlan Steiner. Can you hear me?
Yes. Did you hear what I said about Representative Grunberg has a question for you?
Yes, but I haven't been listening to the discussion.
Right. Well, he'll give you a little background and build this question, I'm sure. So, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, Mr. Steiner, my question goes, and it's kind of an open-ended question. Do you see any practical or constitutional or other issues here with this particular bill? And if you could just go through it with us, not to make a career of it, but what you see, if any major problems with it are, from a practical point of view, not just whether it's constitutional, but issues that could be raised in trial that could make it difficult to ascertain or enforce the provisions of the bill.
Through the chair, this is Quinlan Steiner. I'm the public defender for the state of Alaska. I worked on this bill at the point that it had a criminal penalty associated with it, and I had some concerns at that point, but in working with the bill sponsor, they clarified that this was really simply a violation. And punishable only of a fine of not more than $500. At that point, every concern that I had was satisfied. I didn't see any problem at all, in addition to the fact that it wouldn't implicate the public defender at all. It is broadly written, and that would have caused me concern if you were going to attach a criminal penalty to it. But as a civil penalty, you know, those types of things from criminal defense perspective are a little easier to sort out, and they're not as dramatic, and so at that point I didn't have much of a concern at all.
Can I ask for one follow-up?
Representative Grunberg has a follow-up.
Mr. Steiner, if you can take off your criminal law hat for a minute, and if you were looking at this as a lawyer defending a person from the civil penalties, do you see anything that might cause points of litigation, interpretation, or problem?
I'd be reluctant to answer that question. I don't I don't get involved in civil matters, and I would sort of view this as though it's a penalty, you know, structured like a criminal penalty. It involves sort of commerce, and I wouldn't know how to, I wouldn't be comfortable assessing its impacts related to commerce, which I think these types of restrictions on food items and other things that you might eat or ingest is not something I'm familiar with. I'd be very reluctant to render.
That's fine. Thanks. Sure, that's fine. Representative Ledoux?
I think I was thinking along the same line that Mr. Steiner is not necessarily saying that it's constitutional. He was just trying to say that once it didn't involve the criminal law, his office really didn't care one way.
That's what he said, Representative. Yeah, that's great. Okay, so did you have any other further questions on the other questions, Representative Pruitt?
No, I do, probably for Cynthia, if that's okay.
Yes.
Cynthia, a question that I have for you is, and then just continuation, there was kind of six and question six on this and question nine. You're probably not aware of what we have in front of us, but the second question that in here that would kind of wanted me to kind of dig a little bit more is the wording could be crafted on the packaging to include current in the legislation that could include current and future names of synthetic drugs instead of listing each one of the currently known names. Of course, part of the problem that we've had is that they could change the content. Now, of course, we're putting ourselves in a situation they could change the name. I just want to get an understanding from you. Do you think that with all of the issues that are in place, I mean, obviously we're back here again dealing with this because of the difficulties of trying to get a handle on this. Is this the best thing that you think we have going forward to try to address the issue where we're not having to try to come back every year and fill in loopholes or oversights or changes that these intelligent drug dealers or manufacturers are making? Do you see this as the best thing that we can do? Is there anything you would add to this to help your ability to prosecute?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I see this as a...
Cynthia, just for the record, Cynthia Franklin. Go
ahead. Yes, this is Cynthia Franklin again. I see this as a tool to address what we saw, huge problem in Anchorage, which was over-the-counter sale of these products as being used as a representation by the community that they were safe. So in other words, because the products are primarily marketed to young people, and young people who have grown up in this era of consumer protection believe that when they buy a product in the store, there is some kind of safety message associated with that. That means it must be safe because you can walk into a store and buy it. This ordinance that we wrote was specifically written to address the concept that there are some things that can be sold in a store that are unregulated and in this case are extremely unsafe. So because I have been prosecuting so long, since 1989, I've lived through various designer drug waves and prosecuted through those, and my belief is that this bill and bills like this addressing the sale of these products, if you take the market away, then they go away. And that essentially is what has happened in a very short amount of time in Anchorage, because the stores don't want to sell something that's illegal. And so once the assembly in Anchorage declared these packages to be illicit synthetic drugs, the stores no longer wanted any part of it, and the decreasing the availability does address the problem. Now, can you still buy it on the internet? Yes, you can, and that is why our ordinance also contains the possession element, so that officers could ticket people individually and make their $35 high a $535 high and perhaps get some individual deterrence. So we think of it as a tool, not the end-all be-all. We included the names because it makes it easy for the officers, and because we are in Alaska where stores were receiving large shipments of these products. If we thought if we included the names, and if Dead Man, you know, Potpourri was named in the ordinance, then it's very extremely easy for the officer seizing a packet of Dead Man to say, yep, this is it. This is what the assembly was talking about. But we recognize that there's a challenge in keeping that up with that. And obviously the assembly is a slightly less, it's a little bit easier to keep a city code up to date on those. If we wanted to update those, it's much harder for you as the state legislature to deal with updates on product names and that type of thing. So we wrote our names in, our product names in, anticipating that we might update those if major retailers of the products got large shipments of a new name, we would just add it. But that is a challenge, you know, on the statewide level, and it is something that could easily be changed. Many of the packages that I have as examples are clearly homemade. Words are misspelled. These are things that are manufactured in someone's basement. So, yes, they could change the name. And, yes, it's difficult dealing with these drugs. But this ordinance in the assembly and the Anchorage assembly was specifically designed to address and negate the idea that because you can buy it over the counter legally, it must be safe, and the idea that you could just kind of slide it between and behind the Controlled Substances Act, call it potpourri or glass cleaner, and therefore nobody can get at it or get at you. And the response that we found was the minute that the retailers were convinced that the community condemned the sale of these products, they did react very quickly by taking the products off their shelves.
Representative Pruitt has a follow-up.
Yeah, follow-up on that. And I apologize for taking so long, but just because we move so slow and we only meet once every year, I just want to make sure that we do it right, because the Assembly, of course, meets every 2 weeks, and they can make these changes a lot faster. I did want to address the aspect. I mean, you mentioned that you guys can change it, that the Assembly can change it quickly. And so if there is a new name out there, they can add it easily. But we've decided that we're going to list a bunch of names here, and there's nothing that stops them from changing the name. Is there any sort of wording that we can place in here that can basically cover us if they change one of these names? Is there a way to not have to wait until next year to add some of these new names to the list here?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I think that the idea for us was that we would name the names we were aware of that were on the streets. Those names came from federal undercover buys from stores statewide, from packages that were confiscated by the drunk tank here in Anchorage, the safety center, and API, and places where these types of substances are confiscated from individuals who are checking in. And so those were names of products that we knew had probably at least had a high likelihood of having been bought in Alaska. But the rest of the language of the statute and the ordinance is designed to address the products in a way that doesn't require an officer to know the name. So it's kind of a twofold approach, naming the names that we know, but also then giving the officers the tools to identify the products if the names have changed.
Okay. And then one last question, a little bit different topic or aspect of it, but still to last question is, what is the penalty that the city of Anchorage has placed on this? And well, I'll start with that. What is the penalty that the city of Anchorage has placed?
Representative Pruitt, through the chair, the penalty is $500 fine per packet.
Okay. I appreciate that, and I want to make clear, Mr. Chair, because question three indicates that she doesn't. She that it talks about the fact that it's a question, can we make it clear in the penalty section that the violation for each individual package? Kathleen indicated it was her opinion that it's not necessary to clarify it, but it could be done if we wish. And I don't know, I did read this section, did read, it almost seems like that might be appropriate to indicate clearly that it is per package, because I want to make sure that, because I mean, I read it, a person who violates AS 1721.01 is guilty of violation and upon conviction is punishable by a fine of not more than $500. That to me almost sounds like no matter what you have on you, it's $500. So I don't know. We might want to clarify that and be in compliance with, and just compliance with what Anchorage has. And then second, Mr. Chair, I would note that we have sitting in front of us, this is back to the names. We have a anti-synthetic, but it's just an article from Alaska Dispatch, and they have a picture of WTF brand synthetic marijuana that was purchased in 2013. I looked on here, and there's no WTF brand that's on this list. That's to the point of how easy this is to change. Even on our list, there's not something that we have right sitting in front of us.
Okay, we'll take that up for consideration. We get a little further. Kathleen, Gabrielle, Representative Ledoux, is it on this point? If it is, but I just wanted to.
I
just want to make sure that Kathleen is still there listening in case we decide to specify per each. Kathleen?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Representative Ledoux?
So I guess I'm just wondering, since it seems like it's so much easier for the municipalities to do this because they're able to update on a very regular basis the list of these drugs, and it seems like Anchorage has done so successfully. Why don't we just leave this to the municipalities to do?
Okay. That's more a new question. We're doing is clarifying on these nine questions that we have before us. And when it comes back before a committee, that's a very appropriate question as a whole. Representative Grunberg?
I was thinking maybe we'd get a little more leeway. I was kind of going in that direction.
Yeah, well, we'll get there.
And also, just if I may put something on the record, these fiscal notes, I'm going to have some questions. They're very strange.
Okay, let's take a little of these. Okay, what we're going to do, because of the lateness of the hour today, we're going to go ahead and set this bill aside and work on further questions. And, you know, I'm sure we all have comments and questions in other areas. Like when Representative Pruitt was talking, I was thinking I could probably defend it for the sponsor as a thought that I had, but we aren't there. You know, we aren't there. So what we want to do is just we'll bring the bill back up on Monday if we can get some of these questions satisfied. Representative Grunberg.
May I make a suggestion? It's going to take me a little bit of time to digest this stuff. And it may be helpful to me if you could drop by the office and maybe the rest of us, giving us a little time to look at this and give you our thoughts, or we could send you an email or something. But I can see this could be a lot of money expended for not much return. And in this date of, you know, budget tightening, as you folks know, question is, how do we want to spend our money if the municipality is doing it anyway?
Any other comments for the good of the order? Thank you. We'll see you Monday, and thank you. Our meeting is adjourned at 3:27.